Is the process that is delivered in your organization consistent?
Welcome to the Behind the Billboard podcast, a living, breathing, interactive conversation about getting better as a leader, a team, and as a person. We believe that success is all about people, and we're on a mission to help you grow. Here's your host, Chris Lindahl.
I was fortunate enough to sit down with the CEO of Feed My Starving Children, Mark Crea. Mark is a fascinating leader. He shared so much really about how they've grown Feed My Starving Children. The one stat that sticks out is they've grown from 3 million meals a year that they packed in 2003 to 365 million meals packed this year. They've grown at a rate of 40% for 13 years consistently. There are so many takeaways from this interview. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did.
Hey, Chris, how are you?
Good. Thank you so much for being here. And I really have loved all of the consistency and almost everything that you've done so far. And so we'll talk a lot about that. We'll talk about Feed My Starving Children. But before we get to that point, I really want to go back to the beginning for you because I'm always interested in what led you up to where you are today.
Well, you know, it started, I'm a St. Paul kid, typical family in the 50s and 60s. And, you know, my dad was a businessman, small businessman. Worked his tail off all the time, worked hard, but always was learning and was always. So when I think about where did I get the best leadership examples, it came from my dad.
And almost every single leader that I talk to, it's about being a student first, and it's about being a sponge in the environments they're in. And, you know, so you look back and you've got your father who taught you some of those lessons. Did you go to college? Did you go to work right away? Like, what are those early positions?
Well, just because of my dad, I mean, I started working when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Go down and help him at the store. And so that was just a part of our makeup.
What age were you at? Do you remember back?
I was probably 10, 12 years old.
Amazing.
Going down there doing that. Worked all through high school and college. Went to St. Thomas, the University of St. Thomas, majored in business and came out of that and have a real heart for internships and things. And so in my senior year at St. Thomas, I did an internship for the Hazelden Foundation, and went up there and ended up spending 17 years there working for some really, really great people, some great men and women, but also really found that mission, that piece that said, you can do good work, and then you can really make a difference and do both.
When you were an intern or starting off in those early years, what is it that you were like, you know what, this is what I learned about being a leader. This is something that I implemented, you know, and it's made a huge difference in my life.
Yeah. There were a number of things. I had some great mentors, first of all. But one of the early things I learned, and part of it's your personality, but if you go in with a true attitude and wanting to help others succeed at what they're doing, you can get so much accomplished. And so thrown into some early difficulties and some areas that needed some attention when I was this young intern, this kid out of school, and went in there and just said, how do I help these people accomplish what they're doing or fix some things? I just love personally as a person to say, mm-hmm. You know, just let me fix something. Let me at it and let's see if we can make this better. But just learned a lot from not about myself, but about the others and putting the others first.
Yeah.
Just real valuable. For me.
Yeah. So important to put others first. And it's a great characteristic to have. And it's why I'm really excited to have you here. So what led you up the decision to come to this organization?
A lot of it goes back, Chris, truly to my faith. And it was when I was running my career. Yeah. I was successful. I was doing things. Was I as happy as I wanted to be? No.
Mm-hmm.
When I paid attention to what I thought my God-given talents, and when I aligned that with what I think the Lord was doing, I'm much more successful. And so I went into the corporate world after my time with Hazelden and did that for a number of years and was successful, but just really felt like I wanted to have a bigger impact. And so fast forwarding to 2003 when Feed My Starving Children was small, but looking for some new direction and some new leadership.
Yeah, being fulfilled is such a big thing, and being a leader and what makes you feel like you're actually using all of your gifts to its fullest potential. there's been years in my career where I can honestly say that I felt really empty. And until you start to really get, you know, your values aligned and yep. get clear on your mission on where you're going and what you're doing, like, it does get very difficult. So I can totally relate to that. Okay, so 2003 is when you joined Feed My Starving Children. Is that correct?
Right. You know, they looked for a new CEO. Organization was real small. We had one site, seven staff at that time. I started in early 04 officially with them. And they had been going through kind of a long stretch of 10 years of no growth and really searching to find a way to feed more kids, frankly. And so the organization and the board at that time made a couple of decisions, but the critical decision was re-embracing its Christian roots and saying, we're going to tell people why we're doing this work. We're supposed to mm-hmm. feed the widows and the orphans. Mm-hmm. And who are all these children around the world anyways? They're simply God's kids. Let's go out and feed them. And the organization has been a rocket ever since.
Yeah, no kidding. So real quick, for people that are listening in other parts of the country that maybe aren't familiar with what Feed My Starving Children is, could you give us a little detailed synopsis of Feed My Starving Children and really right. what you're trying to accomplish? Because I think some people listening might not know what Feed My Starving Children is.
Of course. So Feed My Starving Children is a relief organization. But what we've done is something that's different than I think most other organizations in the relief world. We used science and technology. So let's discover if we're going to feed malnourished kids around the world, let's give them the very best food. So using food scientists here in Minnesota, they developed what is the ideal food formula for a malnourished child or a malnourished person, but a malnourished child. So what are the vitamins, the minerals, the proteins, all of the things to put in balance to then give to a child and help rebuild them, give them hope, give them an opportunity to actually learn and grow up healthy. That's what the organization did. Then employed volunteers to assemble and produce, package all of this food, and then use a network of embedded organizations, NGOs, and missionaries around the world and use them as the distribution point. So those are quite different than how most of the relief world works.
Fast forward now to 2004. You joined the organization. You'd been flat for 10 years, right?
Yep.
So it's not much growth. What was your growth like right when you entered the organization? How soon did that growth start happening?
Yeah. Well, I would tell you that the board made the commitment to refocus, rededicate the organization in the fall of 03.
Okay.
So here's just a couple of numbers for everybody. So in 2003, we had one site. We were doing 3 million meals a year. We were in 17 countries, and they utilized 20,000 volunteers to do that. This year, we're going to do 365 million meals.
Wow.
So 3 million to 365 million, 1.4 million volunteers, up from 20,000 volunteers, 70 countries around the world, up from 17. Average annual growth since then of 40% a year through 07 and through 08. Come on, really?
Yeah, wow.
That's going to happen. It's just been a blessing. It's been significant. But the impact around the world has been quite remarkable.
Wow. Congratulations to you and the organization and all the volunteers that have made an impact. That's really incredible.
Yeah, well, it doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't.
In our history now, we've done 2.2 billion. With a B, billion meals that we have shipped to the toughest places around the world. How much of that food should ever really, really get there? Well, we track all of this, of course, and our number is 99.8%. I couldn't ship 2.2 billion meals to Cleveland, to Cleveland and have a 99.8%. How is that possible?
I agree.
When we send it to the Sudan and the Philippines and Haiti and Malawi, and you know, you just, it doesn't make sense other than I believe God protects this food. We're pretty good. Our partners in this network of embedded missionaries and NGOs is good, you know, and that's all that process. That doesn't take you to that number, though.
So this is what makes me so curious about everything that you have going on. Every time that I come to your organization, which is quite often, I leave feeling like this is the most amazing thing that I've ever been a part of. And it's consistent every single time. You've had this significant growth. And like you said, the numbers don't make sense. But with these kind of numbers, there has to be some challenges.
Yes.
40% growth is beyond hyper growth.
Yeah, yeah. makes my head hurt.
Yeah. So what are some of the challenges that you've had to address?
Well, there's always challenges. And mm-hmm. I would tell you as a charity, you know, people would look and say, well, you know, we've got to raise the funds. So we don't take any government funding. This is all funded by individuals and faith communities and businesses. And all that money is raised to buy the ingredients and to be able to produce this food. It's all purchased here in the United States. And so that's an important piece for us. And the volunteers come in and put it all together. That's an ongoing challenge. I would tell you, you know, we're now in 40 states doing mobile pack. We have 8 permanent sites here and in Chicago and in Dallas and in Phoenix. Those sites run 6 days a week, 12 hours a day. And how do we make sure, going back to your process, how do we make sure that there is consistency, that I would tell you the culture we have, how do we keep that culture the same? That's my number one goal. When the board looks at me and said, okay, how many goals you got and what's the number one goal? It is, how do I keep the Christian culture, the culture of process and excellence and urgency, and keep that the same across everything we do?
Yeah, so you have, did you say 1.4 million volunteers or 1.7?
1.4 this year.
Yeah, 1.4 million volunteers.
Yeah.
So my question is how do you keep that in place?
It really does take a lot of work, because when you think of that, so you've got 70-year-olds to 90-year-olds coming in and volunteering, you know, 150, 200 people at a time in our sites. You might have hundreds or thousands at a time in a big mobile pack session. How do you manage that? How do you have consistency? So lots of process in there, lots of attention to detail in there. And, you know, these are people who you get a group in, maybe nobody has ever done anything like this. Why would you think you're going to get any kind of efficiency or production out of that?
Yeah.
But the way we set it up and the way we monitor it and structure it, we have just taken a lot of the guesswork or a lot of the things that might go bump in the night out of the process.
Right.
But we want it to be fun. We want people to come in and with their own two hands in 2 hours, that's what we ask you to volunteer, you're going to feed thousands of kids around the world. And maybe you haven't been on a mission trip. Come to Feed My Starving Children and you're going to experience a mission trip for 2 hours as you get to do this. And the hands that are going to unpack that food on the other side of the world are those starving children. And you can't get much closer than that.
You mentioned mobile pack or a 2-hour event. Just give people listening a little perspective on how many people are actually there volunteering and what maybe the average output of how many meals they're packing. Because it's a fast-paced environment right. That, like you said, is really enjoyable. For those that haven't experienced it, maybe you could fill them in on what that looks like.
So what you're doing is the volunteers are assembling a set of ingredients. So you're gonna work around a cell, we would call it, where you've got people who are adding the ingredients. They're all pre-measured out. So you've got vitamins and minerals in a mixture. You have dehydrated vegetables. You have extruded soy as a protein source, and you have rice. And so these are all dry, dehydrated ingredients. So they're stable, have a longer shelf life. They're lighter, easier to ship. We ship all of this by container load across the world. But volunteers come in and they work in stations. They do all that. If they're going to come in for a 2-hour, you're going to have a 10 to 15 minute introduction. We're going to explain world hunger, what's going on, the uniqueness of what Feed My Starving Children does. And then there are some instructions, since this is an FDA-approved facility. This is a food packing. So people put hairnets on and they wash their hands. They do all those great things. And then they're going to pack for an hour and a half, say. And you're going to see a production curve on that. It takes a little while to get going, and then they're going to be really good. And we do 2 hours because longer shifts, people start to get tired. We want spills. We don't want those things. And then at the end, they get all done, and we do a wrap-up session. We tell them how many meals they pack. And on average, a group, an individual, would come in, work for 2 hours, and they're going to pack 230, 240 meals in that time. So if you're in with a group, you're talking about thousands or tens of thousands of meals in 1 2-hour session if there's, for example, 150 people. So people are amazed at how much food gets produced in that short amount of time.
It's the consistency and like the efficiency of this. I mean, where did this process get developed? And then has it evolved throughout the years, or has it stayed pretty consistent?
Chris, it's evolved a lot, and it continues to. Constant process improvement. Probably one of the most common questions is, well, why don't you just use machines? Why don't you, you know, wouldn't that be better? Well, actually, no, for a couple of reasons. For us, our mission is feeding God's starving children hungry in body and spirit. So we get the feeding the body part. That's the food that's going to go into that. But what about feeding the spirit? Well, that's what's going to happen to these 1.4 million volunteers who get to come in. Almost half of those volunteers are young people. So when you think about energizing and engaging teenagers and younger people in this, they get it, Chris. And half the time, they're the ones bringing their parent, their adults along with.
Of course, yeah.
Because they're ready to do. They want to make a difference.
Right.
And so you tap into that, and then you just put them into a process that makes sense. There's so many different jobs. So people, if you need a sit-down job, we're going to put you on doing the labels for the bags, which is part of the quality control process. If you want to, you know, lift boxes and refill bins and stuff, and you got a lot of energy, we're going to put you out in the warehouse, and you're going to do that. You're going to wrap and strap boxes and everything in between. So that's the other nice thing. You can kind of self-select. For parents to stand there, for their kid who just gets so excited about this, and I just look at these moms and dads who are standing there with a big smile on their face like, look at my kid. They really get it. This is powerful. Or look at the conversation we're having as a result of this experience. You know, why are 6,800 kids dying every day of starvation in the world? I don't understand that. Why should that happen? Well, it shouldn't happen. So come on in and help us make a difference in that.
Walk me through from the point of when just a bag starts in that facility to the point of where it's in the box and it's packed up. It's so efficient that I really want listeners to hear what happens the whole way through the process.
Right.
You know, abbreviated version, but just to give an idea.
So you know, there's been process engineers we've used during the years. You know, they come in volunteer and they get all excited because they get to feed kids instead of make widgets or something. But there's a cell, so it's a U-shaped set of tables, and it's got the ingredients. It has funnels, and it's each ingredient has its own measuring device. There are bags that are food quality bags, and so there are baggers, there are weighers, there are sealers. And so the person who's the bagger, which is the toughest job, let me tell you, puts the bag on the funnel, and then in a certain sequence, those four ingredients get put into that funnel, into that bag. Then the bagger weighs the bag. It's got to be a certain number of grams. That's part of the process and part of the control. Once they do that, then they would hand it off to the sealer. And so these bags are then all sealed with an electric sealer. And then they're given to a boxer who is going to lay them all out. And we need 36 bags. Each bag will feed, when it's cooked, will feed 6 children. So there's 6 servings in a bag. And so that person's going to put 36 bags, and there's diagrams to show everybody how to do this, in a box. Then the runners are going to pick that box up, bring it back to the warehouse. When you're low on ingredients, you know, everybody, there's a tub of rice and a tub, you know, then you're going to say rice, and the runner's going to bring a new tub and put that in there, do that change real fast. So it's pretty seamless. You just want this to go. So we're always looking at the delta times, you know, all of these things. The music. So we play music during the session, and truly, I mean, we've got this worked out to the point where, so what kind of music do we want to play today? Because we need them to pack at 1.3 boxes per volunteer. And we know what that means. And the volunteer isn't going to know whether or not in the course of this whole thing they packed 6 more bags or 6 fewer bags. We're going to know. And when you multiply that times 1.4 million, that's a lot of food. So we're fine tuning that. So kind of the iceberg, what's underneath the water, all of this stuff that we know that's going on. And then we pay our attention to just saying, how do we make this the best experience for people who are giving up their time and coming in and helping us feed starving kids around the world.
Yeah, the process is so consistent. I wanted to share that because every time I go there, I get the same feeling. And it's a great feeling.
Yep.
I love being a part of it. And so those of you that are listening, whether you're local or you're in one of the areas where they've got a mobile pack center or permanent center, I'd love to host you and go with you and attend anywhere. They just have to tell me, if you reach out to me and you're listening to this, like, and send me a message on behindthebillboard.com, I'm in. I'd love to go and experience it with people that have never done it before, because it's something that is super important. And if you have kids or grandkids, I think it's really important to bring them as well. I bring my daughter and her friends all the time. And it's, you know, like you had mentioned earlier, I really think it is important for the younger generations to understand what is happening around the world and what we can do to make a difference and solve this.
It's huge. And, you know, when you talk about learning all the time, we're in that perpetual state. So go pay attention. Go spend some time with Culver's or McDonald's or Target, or, you know, we've got lots of corporations here in the Twin Cities. Go down and spend some time at Disney World or talk to those staff and say, what attention to details. And we tweak this stuff all the time to make sure that what we're doing is just maximizing the volunteers' experience, the productivity of what we're doing. You know, we're going to do 350 mobile pack events in 40 states this year. We've got 8 sites in different states running 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. How do you make that consistent? So whether you walk in an event in Texas or you walk in an event in Minneapolis or one in Phoenix, you're going to get the same high quality performance. The quality of the food, you know, all of those things need to be the same, of course. But we want the rest of it. And, you know, we're surveying our volunteers all the time. We're always saying, you know, what else can we do to improve this? So, and the staff is simply awesome about that.
Yeah, your approach is incredible. I saw something, and it happened to be at Chick-fil-A. I was taking my daughter and friends there, and we're ordering. And I get this question at the end, and she says, would you like to buy a chocolate chip cookie to support Feed My Starving Children?
Yep.
I've never one time in my career of anything I've done have I been so disrupted in my pattern of ordering something. Because typically it's like, hey, do you want a chocolate chip cookie? Do you want an ice cream cone? Do you want to add this? Do you want to upsize? Whatever it is, wherever you are, I'd never heard those words tied together.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about it. I don't know if it's the only one that Feed My Starving Children does.
Well,
what are the thoughts behind that?
Yeah, I mean, that goes to another staff that work with organizations. So Chick-fil-A is awesome, and they did this campaign. So they did this with a whole bunch of their stores, and it's about feeding kids. There's a taco chain called Tacos for Life in the southern United States, and they're producing millions of meals for starving kids. So you buy one of their tacos, and they're going to donate to Feed My Starving Children to help feed one more kid. And that just resonates with people. And it's repeatable, and it's all the things that for us just say, you know, that's awesome. The need out there, the network we have of organizations around the world, what is there? Two things they always say to me. Number one is, please send us more food. We've got more kids to feed. And so that is always there. So the need is so much greater always than what we're producing. So we're chasing that. Got to do it well, though. Mm-hmm. We got to be sustainable about this. And second, this is the most remarkable food we've ever received. But we're a long-term feeding organization. So this is about a sustainable thing. If you're running an orphanage, it's about how do I keep my kids alive this month and next month and the month after. And you can't get on to the sustainable things if you don't know in 2 months where your food's going to come from or where your medicine's going to come from. You know, those are things that stability, we would say we're the foundation for so many of these organizations that they can then build on.
You just said network, our network. And I think a lot of leaders listening have a bigger network than they actually think they do.
Yeah.
Especially with the power of social media now, of how connected we all are, whether it's LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. There are all these platforms out there that allow us to connect to others. And there's been times in my life where we've really tried to get behind something to make a big difference. And it's amazing how many people in my network have stepped up to help. You know, sometimes it's their time, sometimes it's monetary.
Yep.
And there's all different forms of ways that someone can help. And to your point, you had process engineers, might be their talents,
yes,
right? Like they might, you know, they might say, you know what, I think the efficiency would change if you did this or did that. And there are so many different ways to give that I think people always think that it has to be monetary. Yep. And we think it's just writing a check. And that's what I love about your organization. It's so much more than just writing a check. You can actually go in there and make a difference and use your hands to really, you know, help prevent hunger. I mean, it can make a huge difference. So with that, a network of this size, it almost becomes overwhelming as I, you know, that some of the numbers that you're putting, 365 million, I mean, 70 countries and all of these things. How do you maintain and monitor as an organization a network of this size and, I mean, and all these partners? I mean, what types of things do you do?
Well, Chris, now we have more people to do that than we used to. Again, when I started, there was seven of us, and there's now 325 staff. Lots of part-time staff, but in the international programs area, we've got four key staff that divide up the world, and they're in relationship. So this isn't, again, different than maybe other organizations. This is not a transaction with our partners over there that are doing that are feeding the kids. This is a relationship. In fact, for us, it's a Christian relationship. But what we're going to do together is different if it's a relationship versus a transaction. So as we work with them, it is as much about saying, you know, what are all the obstacles? What are the things that you're dealing with? Because they're doing the hard work. I'm sorry, they're in.
No, that's right.
Yeah, you know, there's not much they can count on day to day in many of the places. So how do we help you do that? How do we basically help you feed more kids? That's the important thing for us. So if we can do some things that maybe in a traditional way you wouldn't, you'd say, well, that's not in our bottom line benefit, but for us, it feeds more kids. And they recognize that. I'm sitting with one of our great partners, Feed the Hungry, and we're in Uganda outside a refugee camp having dinner one night. And Stefan looks at me and he goes, Mark, you're weird. And your whole organization is weird. Well, Stefan, I think that's a compliment. And it was. It just said, you're not like anybody else. Mm-hmm. How you treat us, how you work together with us. And I would say that's what I hear from businessmen and women all the time. You know, these people who used to be my competitor aren't my competitor anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, the way I run my business today is so different than it was 5 years ago. For charities, for nonprofits, that's as relevant for us as anybody else to say, how do we adapt in getting people, encouraging people to give us, you know, donations so we can do that? How do we improve our process all the time? How do we help feed more kids? It's just a never-ending piece. How much of our stuff can we get our hands on? And how fast do we got to build our network of distribution of feeding organizations around the world? So that's a big focus for us right now over the next 3 years, and particularly going to what I would tell you are the least of these. So there are places in the world where the need is great, 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 but they also tend to be some of the most difficult places in the world. But we've just been blessed with the ability to develop relationships and get in and get to these kids and feed them. And there's a lot of places where others don't want to go or they can't go. And I would just tell you, we've had the ability to get in there. And so that's a bigger focus for us.
You mentioned there are some areas that are difficult to get into. What does difficult actually mean? Like the conceptions, the misconceptions that come to my mind are someone stealing the meals or someone's blocking them and selling them somewhere else on the black market. Those are the kind of things that I think of. Yep. But what are the difficulties that your partners and you go through as you're trying to get these meals to the deserving people?
Chris, you've got corruption. You've got logistics problems. You've got bad roads or no roads. You've got vehicles. It is not a never-ending list, but it's a big list of things. Maybe active war zones. You have countries where there is just so much poverty and it is so difficult to even function or get around. You know, can you get something distributed once? Well, maybe. How about on an ongoing basis? When I see where this food ends up, on a boat, up a river, on a woman's head, up a mountain, it's an amazing thing to watch. Not once, but time and time and time again. How do you keep it away from the bad guys? A huge, huge issue. And so that's something that for us and our partners, and particularly we believe this food is protected because we ask for protection over it. You can't document it or do a process flow that explains, that answers all the questions. You can do, we do a number of things that said, yeah, I think this is better. it never takes you to 99.8%. But when it happens over and over again, and we look at each other, and we do, and we go, okay, who's taking credit for that one? Gee, I don't know. Some of our partners in some of the most difficult places spent 18 months planning the first shipments into those countries with staff on the ground, a staff here, and how you're going to do that, how you're going to protect this food. This is not anything easy. And yet when I see the result of what we're doing, it's just a humbling, humbling thing. But the kids, I mean, and I travel a lot, so I'm in a lot of countries, and I would tell you, things that I leave with always, there's a set of child's eyes that look at you. You might see hundreds of kids, thousands of kids. Inevitably, some kid just catches your heart, catches your attention. And if you have an opportunity to come back some months later when this kid is now being fed every day, and there are these kids now that are, now they're in college. I've been doing this long enough that just said, oh my gosh, this doesn't even look like the same child. And we're not an organization that does lots of graphic pictures or anything, but there's some before and afters that we show the volunteers that said, this doesn't look like the same child. This child you could put in school on the before side, they would never, ever learn anything. This child can. That makes a difference. That's one. How a mom will look at you. You know, I can just think of my own mom and other, they stare right through to your spine, right? But a mom to look at you because she now has food for her kids. And most of the time you got a skinny mom because she's going to give everything she has to her kids. But maybe watching her children struggle and maybe not survive. What a terrible thing. Now that changes completely. And she's watching her kids thrive. And moms will say any number of things from, God bless you for saving my babies. Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't save them. That's what the volunteers did. Or just recently, mom said, my children are so smart. I never thought my children were smart. You know, they're eating this, they're in school. It's a school feeding program. They come home and they tell me what they've done. And my kids are so smart. Well, of course they are. They're healthy. Mm-hmm. Just powerful things that I take away and say, how can we not every day get up and say, we've just got to do more of this?
Mm-hmm. You mentioned 18 months of planning in some areas to deliver meals and figure out how are we going to get them there, yep, past the bad guys, logistics, and those things. Yep. I think as leaders, that's one thing that we sometimes don't do enough planning for, you know, big challenges, whether it's in our business, personally, professionally. And walk me through like a little bit of what 18 months of planning actually means. Does that mean you're in conversation with partners, or what happens in that 18-month period? Is it, you know, you're finding out that there might be challenges that you have to abort mission and yep, start over, or what types of things are happening?
Well, from strategic planning, mm-hmm, overall, kind of start at that level, you know, we do 3-year planning. So we just started. So we're in year 18, 19, and 20. So that's so we're in the first year of our new plan and what that calls for continued growth and things. You've got your annual planning, you do all that stuff. We have scorecards, we have KPIs. So when you think about what businesses pay attention to, all that stuff keeps our focus on the right things. And we measure and we monitor things all the time. And then you get to the distribution side and say, all right, we're not on the ground doing that distribution. We do that through this unique set of partnerships with organizations that are there, that are embedded. You know what? If you've been in Haiti for 25 years and you're still getting things done, I think you know a few things. Mm-hmm. So those would be the organizations, the people we would look to partner with. Lots of good people there doing a lot of good things in all of these countries, but who are the ones that are the best? So in working with them, and I would tell you a lot of it happens on their part and with whatever's going on the ground, but it is everything from, we would make a commitment to you for a minimum of a year at a time. Some of it's longer. How many meals do you need? When do you need them? And another thing partners tell us is, if I had a nickel for every promise somebody, some organization made me, or if it is a lot of, here's some stuff, Chris, good luck when it's gone, mm-hmm, how far does that get me? But for us to say, this is a relationship, this is a long-term piece, and so you actually make a commitment and then you keep it. And so we can count, we can build our programs around this. And so they're doing that. So, and always they're in a set of state of change, because whatever changes are going on our side, you can double it on theirs. Mm-hmm. So everything from what's going on at the port and can we get there and what kind of security do we need and how do we safeguard this food? How do we continue to distribute it in the way we want? How, do we have to change some of that? When you think about disasters and you think about other issues, you can, and you could, Haiti is our number one country. So when we look at that long term, we've been there a long time. The food is making a huge difference in that country. But you throw in a hurricane or an earthquake, and this fragile country simply has tremendous problems. So now how do you adapt to that and continue on knowing that you just maybe took a giant leap backwards and you've got to rebuild? Our partners have got to rebuild. We've got to rebuild. But it's just a lot of working together, and then we've got to leave room for God to do what he's going to do in our lives, and he's going to put something in front of us. He's going to put an individual, a country. I would tell you, people would ask sometimes, is there a common issue, phrase, something? And I would tell you, for me, it happened early on in this part of my career. On a long-term, my first trip to Haiti, just I'm at the end of this trip, I'm with a missionary who's been there for 25 years, and I'm seeing all the need in this country, which is so overwhelming, Chris. And we're together one night, and Bobby looks at me and says, Mark, all these children that you see that are suffering, he said, they are going to die one at a time. Save them one at a time. There's going to be this kid, this orphanage in front of you. Save that one, and then go on and save another and another. If you try to save the whole world, not going to work. And so truly, just every day, save some more kids. And that's for me what drives me.
Yeah, that's great advice, to save one at a time. I think so often in life we try to solve these massive problems instead of simplifying it down to something that's actually achievable. Yep. We try to, you know, save the whole world, or and the next thing you know, we don't accomplish anything.
Well, and you know, we're driven. We want results. You know, come on, that's what we are. I like that part. But then I get taught by so many other cultures and others that said, there's some differences here. You got to take a different, this is a marathon, not a 100-yard dash, but I better understand. We listen to our partners. They drive a lot of what we do. This is not about going there and saying, oh, I can solve the problems in country X here. No, I really can't. So we better listen to the people there and say, what do you most need, or how can we best help you? And we do food. We're very vertical. We do food, and we do it really well. We have multiple formulas. The rice formula is the biggest. That's 90% of what we produce. But we have specialty for cholera and for Ebola, and we have food for children, for infants. But that all came from our partners saying, this food is great for here, but we don't have anything for little orphan kids, and we can't get our hands on enough formula to do that. Do you have something you can do? Okay, go back to the scientist, figure all that out, do all that kind of stuff, and come back and say, try this. Might take 26 formulas to get it right, but we're going to do that. But we're going to drive to success. For us, obstacles all the time, doesn't matter. We're going to drive through those and eventually get to a point that said, okay, now this works. And, you know, I think that's common for a lot of leaders.
That's right. The thing that has really attracted me to everything you're doing is what you actually just mentioned. It's how crystal clear your mission is and what you're doing. You mentioned food's what we do. And I think too often nonprofits and businesses try to do too much.
Yep.
And they try to be all things to all people. Obviously, with the relationships and the network you have, there has to have been times there's been an attraction to doing all sorts of other things.
Yep.
How do you stay disciplined in what you're doing?
Oh, Chris, that's a $64 question. I call it mission creep. You're here and, oh, this is important too, and this is important. And nothing wrong with it if you want to do that. You're completely horizontal, and you're doing all these different things. Well, we just work against that all the time. But So do we care about clean water? Of course we do. Do we care about sanitation? How about good agricultural practices? Yes, yes, yes. School, yes, yes. Building homes. All that stuff is important. Do we have to do it? No. Can we, and this is part of the process, the relationship with our partners, to say if you're an organization and you're in Uganda and you need to drill a well or a borehole, we don't need to get into that business. What we need to do is find the very best organizations that are doing that and use some of our capacity and horsepower. And then when our partner says, oh gosh, here's our need. Well, you know what? Here are three organizations. We've already kind of pre-screened. We've done things. Now, you can use them or not, but basically, we've taken a lot of that work off your hands, and maybe it's the good seal of approval from FMSC, and not that we know everything about everything, but that has made it a big difference to say, let's partner with an organization that does clean water, that does education, that does things, and then get our partners working together. But you might say, well, why wouldn't four different organizations in Kampala all work together? Well, because they've all got blinders on and they're all just trying to survive and make their thing. And they frankly don't have a time to look at what another organization 10 miles away might be doing. Mm-hmm. And so again, for us to say, let's work together. We're going to bring you together. And you know what? If we just spend some time together and bless each other and do that, then that's okay. But you know what happens? You do education really good, Chris. And maybe I do healthcare really good. And all of a sudden, we get in the same room and we're talking to each other and we discover, oh my gosh, would you help me and I'll help you? And it sounds simple, but it's really tough to do.
Mm-hmm.
So we work on all of those things too.
Mission creep. That's a real thing, not just in the nonprofit world, but I think all of the world where yep. we tend to get distracted and we lose focus of what we're really trying to accomplish. And that's a really good takeaway. Hiring the best people. You yep. mentioned this earlier. I mean, that is really everything. Without yep. the best people or the right people, you can't accomplish something nearly to the level that Feed My Starving Children is. How do you find the best people?
Oh, you got to work at it. So when I think about other learning all the time, good to great, StrengthFinder, you know, those are things that we actively use mm-hmm. at Feed My Starving Children. I'm a big believer in that. And so who do we want to find? Who's on the bus, right? And what seat are they in? It starts with our HR folks, but it's indoctrinated into the organization that said, what's going to set you apart? I can assess this side of your resume, this side of the ledger that said, what's your skill set? What's your experience? What's your education? Okay. That's pretty obvious. It's the other side for me that is equally important, maybe more important, that said, do you work and play well with others? Do you have a passion for what we're doing? And when we find people that have both of those and we work hard at it, we get results that when we talk to others in our industry, they look at us and go, how do you do that? That doesn't make sense. And I would say, yeah, it doesn't. But when you get passionate people that are dedicated to what you're doing and they see they're making a difference, it's not about working 100 hours a week. It's just about a focus and a passion. And if I surround myself with that, I got to surround myself with some really good people, people that are smarter than me. And when you do that, and you got to work hard at that, and you empower them, and you enable them, and you develop them, then you get results that defy all the other stuff going on.
Yeah, the people is such an important part, and the yep. passion piece is, you can really do a lot of really big things in this world if you have the right, like you said, the right people and the yep. right seats on the bus, and they're passionate, and you can feel it. You know, yep. I walk into your organization and I can feel that passion that exists there. And if you have people in your organization or you have a team or company or whatever you're at in leadership, if you can't feel that passion when you walk in, something's off.
Right.
Because you can accomplish far more, to your point, the resume and the skills.
Yep.
It's very rare that I read a resume that doesn't look great.
Right. I mean,
like,
of course.
Most of them are polished or put together. Yep. And now you can hire someone online to write you the best resume in the world. It really comes down to those other things. And so that is super smart.
Yep.
So traveling to 50, how many countries did you say you've been to?
41 countries.
41 countries.
Yeah.
41 countries.
Yep.
You mentioned earlier that, you know, a couple of things that have made a big impact on you is looking in a child's eyes and looking in a yep. mother's eyes. What other things have you learned in being in all these different countries? Because most people listening probably aren't ever going to be in a position to travel to 41 countries. Yeah. So what types of things are you learning and seeing in these different parts of the world?
A couple of things. And so the first is that there isn't one solution here. What is going to work and make a difference in Uganda is different than Guatemala, is different than the Philippines, is different than Haiti. And so if you go in with a mindset that said, first of all, either I've got it figured out or this is how we're going to solve world hunger or other things, I'm shaking my head saying no. You've got to understand. Now, are there similarities? Are there things that will work in several countries? Sure. But if you don't understand and immerse yourself in that culture, in that country, and say, here's what's going on, here's what you got to contend with. And when we team up with those embedded organizations, that's where we get that interaction, that ability, because they're there. And we're not there to tell them, here's what you need or here's how you need to do that. We're there to say, what do you need? Here's what we've got. Does this make sense for you? How does this fit in to your programs and what you want to do? So that's one thing. I think other things, so many parts of the world think so differently. And I would tell you there's countries that I've been in where they're not thinking about this month, this quarter. They're thinking in decades or longer. What do I think the result of this is going to be 100 years from now? Wow, that's so different from how we think and what we do here. It's just so different.
How about advice? Like, of everywhere you've traveled, is there something that sticks out that, like, someone gave you advice and said, you know, this thing, or if you do this or do that, it's going to change? And to this day, you still remember that moment. And yep. You shared one that stuck out for me that I'll remember forever is, the children are going to die one at a time and you have to save them one at a time. Yep. I'll never forget that you shared that with me because that's a really great advice. But what other small things or things have you learned along the way that maybe you could share with our listeners?
So I would tell you, because what we're dealing with, what I go to see is kind of the boots on the ground. I'm there. I'm with the missionaries, with the NGOs that are caring for the people directly. They're caring for the kids. They're running the school, the orphanage, the rescue center. And so you're at that level. You're not dealing with bureaucracies or you're not dealing with necessarily other folks. And what I hear from people, and I don't think we maybe get this often enough here in the U.S., is from those folks, from the moms, from the kids, their admiration, their thanks to the United States, their thanks to us. I don't understand, Chris. I'm a 90-year-old woman in Tanzania. I have no idea why you would ever care about feeding me. But the gratitude is huge around the world. And we don't always hear that. Now, could we and should we do more? Yes. But I think it's much greater than people are led to believe. I think that's one piece. I think the other thing that sticks for me so much is when you're talking to parents, they love their kids every bit as much as you or I do. And they many times are put into these terrible, terrible situations where parents have four kids and they only have enough food for two or three. What's going to happen? Are they bad parents? Are they bad people? No, they're not. They're desperate. A parent should never, ever be put into that situation. A mom should never have to choose. And so when I look at that and just say, if they have the basic things, then the mom, for example, isn't going to get up every single day and be in this crisis mode and just say, my whole world, my whole day is about how do I keep my kids alive today? Wait a minute. I've got food for my kids today and this week and next week. So, you know, our feeding programs, it would be very common for a mom to get a month's worth of food at a time and on an ongoing basis. Most of these folks have maybe never had more than 2 days worth of food ever in their life. And that's so hard for us to understand here. But all of a sudden you do that and that radically changes their world and what they're thinking. It gives them hope. We talk about that a lot, that if you can restore hope, then other stuff can happen. You got parents, you got a mom that can say, I want my kids to go to school now. I was in Malawi recently and we were in a primary school and the principal said, so this is like first grade through sixth grade, rural school, very poor, 2,000 children in this school. Principal comes up and he's excited. We've been feeding the kids every day at school lunch, our food, for 2 years now. He says, I got two things to tell you. Number one, There are 200 primary schools in this district in Malawi. 2 years ago, our school was number 187 out of 200. We were at the bottom of the pile. This year, on our testing, we are number 8.
Wow.
Same kids, same teachers, same curriculum. What's different? These kids are being fed every day, this nutritious meal. Second thing, he shows me this piece of paper. He says, see, there's 2,087 kids in this school. This has never, ever happened before. Look at this piece of paper. There are more girls this year in our school than boys. That has never happened. And, you know, the girls are going to kick the academic butts of all the boys anyway.
That's
right?
The truth.
But to have, 1,103 girls and 900 and some boys, he just said, people are sending their girls to school. They never did that, or they didn't do it very often. Because one, they're being fed, and now they're healthy, and now they're being educated. As a dad with four daughters, that's a cool thing to see.
Yeah, we forget sometimes how different it is here versus other parts of the country and how we take food for granted.
Yep.
I mean, we have such a surplus of it, and we really forget what that means. I do know that it's been helpful for me to put my daughter and to put me in situations like that.
Yep.
So I better understand what it would be like if, because I think sometimes we forget if it's not our child or not our son or daughter or grandchild, it doesn't feel quite the same.
If I was hungry, Chris, there's a dozen places I could go. I could go to my neighbor. I could go to the church. I could go to other places and say, geez, I'm hungry. Can you make me a peanut butter and jelly sandwich?
Mm-hmm.
If you're in so many of these countries, that simply isn't an option. Mm-hmm. There's no food shelf. There's no safety net. Pastor doesn't have any food. He's as poor as you are. Your neighbors don't have any food. What do you do when you're in that situation? It's just a difficult thing. You can change that, fundamentally change that cycle. Then all the other things can happen as a result after that.
Mm-hmm. So much of what you've shared in this interview has really been about gratitude and being so thankful for your partners, being so thankful for the network, for the volunteers, for the employees. You mentioned a word before we started that is really your focus and which is really important, which is hospitality.
Yep.
And I think of the last event that I was at where I really experienced this, and it was actually one of your events. It was Martin, and he gave me this clay mug that was put together by the kids. I'm not sure what country it was from.
From Haiti.
From Haiti. And so he gave me this gift, and I told you, it's just that moment like I'll never forget. It's that hospitality of, he went way out of his way. He didn't have to provide me of a mug. But you mentioned that the focus for you in the future here is really on this hospitality thing. Earlier in the interview, you mentioned Walt Disney.
Yep.
What types of things are you really focused on from a hospitality standpoint?
So if we start with the volunteering process, if we look at that, which is, that's the lion's share, that creates everything. So everything from the moment you go on our website or you contact us and say, I'm interested in coming and volunteering. Okay. What's our interaction? What kind of response and things do you get there? Now, once you come here for your 2-hour volunteering session, well, now we got you. And so what is that whole, from the moment you walk in and how are you greeted all the way through? Are we educating and motivating people? Well, do they have clear enough instructions? All of those things. So we look at that continually. To the point that you leave and we do the wrap up and you leave feeling like you have made such a tremendous difference because you have. So I would say the before and after, there's a lot of work on that side. So after you leave, one of the things you say is, the food you packed today is going to Haiti. Great. What if, and this is what's right in front of, we're almost there. Say 2 weeks later, you get an email from us that said, hey, Chris, thanks for coming in. If you remember, guess what? That food you packed just got loaded on a container today and is on its way to Haiti. And 3 weeks later, you get another email that said, hey, Chris, guess what? The food you packed is in Haiti. It is now at the Love a Child Orphanage, and it's being fed to these kids. And here's Christine. Here's an example of one of the kids that's eating the food that you packed and the difference it's making in her life. So what are the things all around that? Why we've got you there and before and after that we can do that just said, how do we complete this process? How do we complete, if we could take somebody, and I do this all the time, if I could take all these volunteers and put them in the spot when I'm standing in front of that mom or that missionary or feeding the kids myself, say, if they were here right now with me, I'd never have to worry about raising another dime because everybody would go, oh my gosh, this is the most powerful thing. Here, take my wallet. You know,
yeah, of course. Yeah.
Now we got to be good stewards, and we are. So, you know, Charity Navigator, 4-star rating for the last, I think we're going to be coming into our 14th year of using them or going. That puts us in the top 1% of charities nationwide. 22 cents a meal. 91% of the donations of your money that you donate goes to the feeding program. So are we good stewards? Are we smart about this? Are we wise? Yes, 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 yes. So that's all a part of the package. So whether you want to say, well, what are you going to do with the $100 I give you? Or did this experience, what if I have this younger kid and I'm trying to get them engaged in this, or they don't want to put the hairnet on? What, you know, is the staff handling that in a really, really good way that said, you know what, I've got a special hairnet for you. And we had taken some magic markers and marked it up and said, this is one I've been holding just specially for somebody. Would you like this one? I mean, just 100 little things like that.
Those little things make such a huge difference.
Yep. Special needs kids. Every day at all of our sites, we have special needs folks come in. That's a huge blessing. Generally, they're on the receiving end of having care. To have packing sessions that said, you know what? We've got a packing session simply with this organization that deals with special needs. And it's a little bit different, and the pace is going to be a little bit different, but they get to give back, and that's so powerful to watch.
That is powerful. To share where those meals go and to really get to, you know, here's where your meals went, here's when they were loaded, here's where they landed, and here's where they were delivered is, it gave me a different emotional feeling than anything I've experienced. And the reason that is I think about the world that we're in and where we can crowdfund around causes and people that are in need. And so nonprofits have evolved too, like how we contribute money, how younger generations contribute money with all of the technology and social media. So what are some of the things that you're doing at Feed My Starving Children to evolve into this more social media world that we live in?
Right. So when we look at the sheer number of volunteers and others, we've got a ton of young people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we better understand how they communicate and how they want, you know, so social media is a huge thing for us. How do you want to give? Well, do we have online? Do we have mobile friendly device stuff? If we don't, we're going to be in trouble. So that's a part of continuing to change as well all the time that said, okay, do we still send out a direct mail letter to folks? And there's a whole category of people who love to get that and they respond to that. Well, you better not do that with the 18 to 30-year-olds because that's not going to work. But they're a powerful force for us. Majority of our staff are young people. So they keep me on my toes all the time, trying to keep
up
with them.
Which is good for you.
But so just listen to them.
Yes,
again,
right.
Going back to the leadership that said, if they're waiting for all the great ideas to come out of my office, wow, we're in a lot of trouble. So are we listening to our staff? Are we doing that well? Do we survey the staff? Do we? Yes, yes, yes. We do all of that to say, let's make sure we do this well and involve them and pay attention to this. Hey, no. This is how we need to communicate.
People like to communicate differently. Yeah. Right. So you might have someone that's in a younger generation that says, I only want a Snapchat message or a Facebook message or a text message. I always use the analogy that you can call someone that's the younger generation. They won't answer and they'll send you a text back saying, hey, what's going on?
Yeah.
Like, and then you get someone that grew up where cell phones weren't a thing and had a rotary phone at one point.
Yep.
And they just say, pick up the phone and call me. Yep. I just want to talk to you.
Yep.
And so make sure whatever business you're in as a leader, that you understand that your customers are going to want to communicate differently. And that is really, really good advice. You've built this amazing community. It makes sense to me that you mentioned having all of these younger people that want to be a part of your organization because they want to be a part of a community.
Yep.
They want to be a part of something bigger.
Yep.
How do you continue to build this positive and fun community as you scale to the size that you're at?
That's probably where most of my time and energy is, or concern that said, how do we continue to evolve? You know, we got to continue to do things that we do well, but how do we adapt, whether that's in fundraising or whether that's in production, to this younger generation? And how do we do it? And how do we do that when you're in Dallas versus Minneapolis versus Seattle? Or, you know, what's unique or different geographically as well? It is a prime concern for me when I think about what are my key goals or every year that the things that I'm working on. And then for the staff too. So for the staff right around me, I've got a mixture of staff there because I need that. I need all those different, where are my blind spots? I need those perspectives. I would look at our HR folks and say, okay, you just keep me out of jail. Okay, that's a good thing. I joke.
Yeah, of course.
So where are those folks around there? And simply continue with all the sites and things. We've got these incubation things going on. So if Mesa, you know, down in Phoenix wants to try something, wants to experiment with something, and maybe it makes a lot of sense for the community they're in and stuff down there. So guess what? In the summer in Minnesota is our slowest time of the year. We're busy all the time. I go in Star Trek terms. So I say we're on warp 4 instead of warp 8, right, in the summer. But Mesa is super busy in the summer. Why not? Let's go do something with the kids. Well, it's 115 degrees out. I don't know. Well, you know what? We can go into this air-conditioned thing, and we can do this great, powerful mission for 2 hours. Okay, let's do that. So that they've got some things to adapt to and do differently down there, and yet you go in and the process is still the same. So it's a really intriguing, exciting thing for me to watch happen. Yeah.
Blind spots, such a big thing in leadership. If you don't have people around you that can either let you know what your blind spots are or help you fix and fill in those blind spots, you need to get someone, because I've got a ton of weaknesses, and without my leadership team, we wouldn't be where we are today.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. If you've never done a 360 in your organization for yourself, not the most fun thing to do, let me tell you, folks, but it's a powerful thing to then sit with this person you've hired who's going to, for 3 hours, tell you all the misconceptions and all the things about you that other people think. You know, you've got to have that self-awareness, and I've got to have people around me who I tell and give permission to say, no, you can come into my office and tell me the things that you would never want to tell your boss and go, you know what? Maybe you're not seeing this, but dun, 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 dun. And I've got some staff that do that, and that's invaluable as a leader for me.
Allowing and empowering people around you to be able to be honest and transparent is really important as a leader. So if you're in an organization and you're leading a group of individuals, make sure you give them permission to give you that constructive feedback, because it'll help you grow and it'll help the organization grow as well. So you mentioned mobile pack events in some of the areas that you're in. So if people are listening and they want to be a part of your organization, they want to help out and they want to make a difference, what is the best way to do that?
Well, we've launched a new website this past year. So you simply go on fmsc.org and the website will take you through all of those things. So if you want to volunteer, you go to the volunteer tab. The sites are on there, the mobile events. If you're in, you know, Virginia, you punch up Virginia and it'll tell you what events are coming and where and when in Virginia. And so that if you're in Minnesota or Chicago or Phoenix, or, you know, you've got lots and lots of opportunities.
I want to make sure that listeners hold me accountable. I truly meant that I want to go with as many people as I can that haven't been before. I don't even care what state or city it's in.
Yeah.
So just reach out to me on Behind the Billboard or send me a message. I would be honored to be invited with your group to go. Okay, so just changing gears to sort of wrap up here, I've got a couple last questions that I always like to ask leaders and high drivers like yourself. What does an average day look like for you, if there's such a thing as average?
You know, that was my thought, Chris, is like, average? There's no average. Wow. I would tell you that the size and scope of us now, I mean, I used to, when I started, hey, I'd get off the phone with a partner or a donor, and I'd go out the warehouse and unload the rice truck. You know, I mean, that's what you did. I'd do the group in the evening if the staff person was sick. Now, I hired everybody. I don't get to hire everybody anymore. They don't allow me on the forklift anymore. So it really is about empowering, setting the goals, keeping focus on the values and the things that are critical, the vision for the organization, empowering others to carry that out, doing different media and pieces. You know, I get to travel. It was myself, or it was Matt, who's our international operations guy, and myself running around the world doing this. Well, now there's more people to do that. So I can cherry pick a little bit more. But when we're developing new countries or new programs, that's something. There's a couple of very sensitive countries that I still handle, and it's just because they've been with me for a long, long time. Talking to media, talking to supporters, you know, certainly the board is as well, working with them. So, and then getting around to the sites. It's kind of a little bit of the Walton experience, which is saying, I got to get out and see what's going on in Aurora, or what's going on in Richardson in Texas, and spend time, meet the new staff. I got to meet every single new person we have at some point and just learn about them, talk about Feed My Starving Children so they understand what's really important for us. What are the things that matter? Mm-hmm.
Do you have any specific morning routines or ways that you start your day that are some sort of consistencies to how you get going to get prepared for your day?
I do. So I recently shortened my commute. I had an hour and 15, hour and 30 minute commute each way. Now it's less than a half an hour, which is a lot in itself. But I've got Sandy. I've got this unbelievable assistant, and I would crash and burn in like 12 minutes, you know, without her. So she's there to help organize all that stuff. So I have a daily sheet that I use that has key emails on it. It has my key appointments for that day. I have a sheet that said, okay, what are the five critical things that I need to accomplish today? Now, something might get added, something might get taken off, but that keeps my focus. And then there's room to add other things as well. And I use my phone more and more, but I'm still a little bit of a paper and pen guy. We have a morning devotional at 9 o'clock where the staff get together. And it's just whoever wants to do that. We pray for our partners, a different partner every day around the world, just for their safety and protection and the kids they're feeding. Anything else, if you know somebody's sick or we've got a new baby or you know whatever, we just spend some time, the staff together, doing that. And then my day's kind of ready to get started after that.
I just want to say thank you so much for being on this episode. And I want to share with our listeners, you know, if you love this episode, make sure to give us a 5-star review and include any feedback or takeaways that you had. I always love listening to our listeners and what they take from these interviews. But also one thing that I want to remind people is we actually transcribe the entire thing by hand. So if you go to behindthebillboard.com, you can read the entire episode if you're of interest. And then one special thing that I wanted to do is if you're listening to this episode right now, that means that it's posted on our Behind the Billboard Facebook page. For every single comment or like that we get on this episode, we're going to donate $1 back to Feed My Starving Children. Wow. So I really want to encourage everyone to share this as, you know, with as many people as they can, because there are some significant takeaways in this episode from Mark. And I'm just honored to be here and be a part of Feed My Starving Children. It's been fun to watch the success of your entire organization. It's so incredible what you've built and what you've done. And so just congratulations to everyone there. And just a quick special thanks to Martin for that gift as well. I had mentioned that story earlier, but I didn't get a chance to say thank you. So awesome. I do really appreciate that. And thank you, Mark, so much for being on.
You bet, Chris. Thank you very much. And for all those likes, every dollar was going to feed 4 kids. So get out there and like this program a lot so we can feed a lot of kids.
That's great. Yeah, thank you so much.
If you loved this episode, give us a great review, subscribe, and share us socially so we can spread the word and build a community of difference makers. And if there's a leader who inspires you, send your suggestions for future guests to Chris's team at behindthebillboard.com so we can get better.